Connect with others in the Awaken Therapist community and join us over on Patreon. When you become a member of the Awaken Therapist community, you'll gain access to exclusive teachings, consultations, and resources. Find out more at awakentherapist.com. I'm Harmony Quaker, licensed counselor, author, and visiting instructor at Naropa University, where I teach Gestalt therapy. I created this podcast to support therapists and clients in unlocking the magic of psychotherapy. In season two, I'm joined by expert therapists who bring a wealth of insight into the conversation of transpersonal counseling. In our humanity, our capacity to connect with our clients is fundamental to our effectiveness. However, it's also where our own lack of awareness or unconscious biases can interrupt the therapeutic process. In this episode, I share about some of the mistakes therapists commonly make, and in the teaching portion, I guide you in holding clear energetic boundaries. I hope you enjoy this episode. About 2 weeks after I graduated with my master's, my mom got really sick, and we soon discovered that she had a very aggressive form of cancer. And I flew down to be with her during her treatments, and 22 days after her diagnosis, she died in the hospital, and I felt groundless. My mom and I were very, very close. And she was a healer and a fierce role model for me. Although she was definitely a flawed human and we had our mother-daughter dynamic, she was my biggest advocate. She always lifted me up and saw my greatness. And when she was gone, I felt so lost. And I definitely couldn't be a new therapist at that time. And I sought out counseling. I needed help grieving my mother. I felt so disoriented and so lost without her. I was 30 years old at the time. I went and I saw a counselor, and the first counselor I saw talked about her grief of her mother. And I just felt so much pain, and I felt so missed and upset that she didn't seem to be able to hold space for me. And so I didn't go back and I sought out another counselor. And it was almost like the opposite was true for the second attempt at counseling, where the therapist hadn't experienced much loss or grief and she didn't know how to be there with me. And so eventually I ended up moving to Boulder, Colorado, and I tried to find another therapist. And I found somebody who was a Gestalt therapist and was older than me. I thought these things might help to have this therapist have capacity to meet me where I was at. And by this point, I was so anxious. My grief had turned into tremendous anxiety and feeling of lack of safety in the world. So I went to her and I said, "I've become so anxious since the loss of my mom, and I can't even leave my dog alone. I feel so scared all the time." And her response was, "You know, you can't do that forever." And again, I felt so heartbroken and so missed. I was in such a huge experience, and I was so alone in this experience, and I was seeking a wise healer who could help me process this major grief. My first huge loss in my life. I hadn't started my private practice yet. I was working at Boulder County Public Health, and I was teaching undergraduate at the time. My capacity to hold space emotionally was very limited, and so teaching roles, both at the county and at the university, was a role that I could fill. And I eventually got married and had my first child and found myself experiencing tremendous postpartum anxiety. And I developed really intense insomnia. And fortunately, I had a friend who was a therapist who referred me to a healer who had training as a therapist, but was no longer working as a therapist. And this healer really changed my life. She could see me with this depth and clarity that I had never been seen before. She could see what was beneath my words. She could see my deeper emotional expression. She could see that the way that my energy had been mistuned, not only by this loss, but by life in general, and by the stress and trauma of my history. And I went on a deep, deep healing journey in working with this healer. And I began to study therapy through the lens of what is it that a therapist thinks that they're doing to support the healing of their client versus what is it that the client actually needs in order to reconnect with their true source of healing. On my own healing journey, reconnecting with my essence was the most reparative experience that I had. There were the thoughts of my mind, my own meaning making. There was my emotional pain, my inner turmoil and suffering. And quietly beneath that was my essential self. And when I could be with my meaning making and my emotions and my more subtle energy experiences from my essential self, that was when I really experienced deep transformation and repair that I could integrate into my life in a really practical, lived way. And once I made my way through this healing journey, I felt ready to start sitting with clients and I began my private practice. In this time, I could see my own mistakes that I was making that other therapists had made with me that didn't feel good to me. But I could see the impact on my client, and I started amending the relationship in real time. And now I've been a counselor educator for over 6 years, and bringing awareness to the way a therapist disrupts contact with their clients is one of the ways that I support new therapists in really expanding their capacity to hold space for their clients to rediscover their true nature and use their own energy for their healing. So, with that, I wanted to share the five mistakes that therapists commonly make. The first mistake is doing too much too soon. Now, this can begin at the initial phone conversation with a potential client where a therapist already starts to try to work with the client therapeutically before that therapeutic contract is even set. The initial phone call is really a time to hear what's happening for the client and invite them into the space in a really empathetic way. But another way that this happens is when we first start working with a client, if we try to start changing the client, then the client will feel missed and misunderstood and will likely not enter into therapeutic surrender. When we first start working with a client, we are learning their inner map. A client arrives to a session as they are, and there's no right way to be a client. As we listen to our clients and learn their inner map, we learn their level of awareness. We're discovering how much contact do they have with their body? What are their interoceptive senses? We're learning the way that they disrupt contact with the present moment, with themselves, and with the environment. Without seeing these disruptions as bad, we're really trying to see our clients as accurately as possible. If we try to change our clients here or do an experiment or offer an intervention that the client isn't ready to do, clients will feel misunderstood and be less likely to want to engage with therapy and continue on with therapy, or they'll be less likely to enter into therapeutic surrender where they really experience the deep transformation that is possible for them. And so, in our initial encounters with our clients, we're really wanting to see them and hear them as accurately as possible. And our witness is the medicine that really begins to create the therapeutic relationship, which leads me to the second mistake that therapists commonly make, and that is doing work that isn't ours to do. So therapy is really a place for a client to increase awareness of their patterns, work through unfinished business from the past, regulate their nervous system, and rediscover their sovereign truth, their will. Anytime a therapist inserts our ideas of how we think a client should be onto them, or we work to get our client to be different than they are, we cross over what's known as the contact boundary. I like to call it the sacred boundary because to me, this boundary is a sacred place where we encounter our clients. For example, if we're working with a client who has blunted interoceptive senses where they don't have a lot of access to the sensations that occur on the more subtle level of the body, or they can't see their inner landscape. If we try to change that client and make them have higher interoceptive senses, that isn't our work to do. Similarly, if we're sitting with a client who spends a lot of time interpreting themselves or analyzing themselves or going into these divergent stories and meaning making, trying to come up with a story that has them feel better. If we try to make that client be different than they are, that isn't our work to do. However, seeing our client accurately and inviting them to see themselves accurately also, that is our work to do. So, in this example with a client who spends a lot of time in their mind with these divergent stories, we can reflect that to our client and say, as I'm sitting here with you, it seems like you spend a lot of time in your mind searching for a story that's going to have you feel okay with what happened. What do you notice about yourself right now? This level of awareness is healing in and of itself. And being a clear mirror of reflection for our clients offers them an increased level of awareness so that they can begin to be with themselves from their awareness-based knowing and find their way through their inner matrix, which is their work to do. When a client changes from their own sovereign will, as supported by their own awareness, the change and repair that happens in their system is deep and lasting. When we insert our ideas onto our client or try to change them in any way, we're trying to use our will to do the client's therapeutic process. And it's a misuse of our energy, and it really crosses over that contact boundary. This is where therapists feel so depleted and clients feel so stuck. And so, staying in our own source of energy and inviting our client's own awareness and their own sovereign will to use their energy to do their therapeutic process is really where we will see that deep and lasting change of therapy. The third mistake I see therapists make is they educate instead of co-regulate. Psychoeducation can be extremely useful and helpful for clients, especially when they have more of a top-down processing where they want to understand why they would be doing something. However, when we bypass therapeutic process of nervous system co-regulation in order to educate our clients, we're giving them information that they don't necessarily know how to incorporate into their lived experience. And I've seen this with so many clients who have come to me from other therapists. They know a lot about nervous system regulation, but they don't know how to regulate their nervous system. And so, by being present with our clients in such a way that we co-regulate with them, they can find their way through their chronic patterns of dysregulation and rediscover how to be available for themselves and the sensations in their body and find their way into a regulated, aware state. In order to effectively co-regulate with our client, we need to be seeing them accurately and discovering if they're seeing themselves in a similar way that we are. So, in this example I used with a client who spends a lot of time up in their head searching for a narrative that will have them feel more at ease with the events of their lives, that meaning making is actually an attempt at finding some sense of peace that will have them feel more regulated. In doing so, they are actually avoiding the dysregulation that is beneath those narratives, that's beneath the searching of their mind. And so, by reflecting to this client how they seem up in their mind, that's the entry point into co-regulation. If the client says, "Yes, I am. I am searching. My mind is searching for an answer," we can invite our client to just close their eyes and notice that their mind is searching. This one suggestion invites our client to move from hyper-identification with their mind into awareness-based knowing, where they become the witness. This is really a mindfulness approach to psychotherapy. Once the client is the witness of their mind, we can then ask them, what do they notice in their body? And so this is an invitation to deepen into their experience. Whatever the client says in response to that question is welcome. There's no right answer. Even if the client goes back into their storytelling and meaning making, that's a perfectly fine answer for what do you notice in your body, because it just lets us know the client's inner map that they turn away from their body. And so we can reflect that. It seems like you're turning away from the sensations in your body and staying hooked into the narratives of your mind. I just want you to notice that and just turn away consciously. So we're following our client's energy and trusting that they can find their way back on their own. So turning away consciously. And now what do you notice? Often what happens is when a client isn't resisting that movement, they start to feel more settled and they can see that we're welcoming them as they are. And so they feel safer. And then we might ask them, and what do you notice about your breath? And this is an invitation to turn towards the body again. The breath is a part of the autonomic nervous system that a client can actually influence. And so once they notice their breath, they can notice their nervous system response, their emotional dysregulation. And we just keep inviting the client to be more of who they are with each layer of their experience over and over again in service of co-regulation. And as you can see, this is very different from explaining to the client about hypo or hyperarousal. It's different from explaining to the client how to be available and welcoming of themselves. Our interventions are actually doing that for them. The fourth mistake that therapists commonly make is that we think that countertransference is bad, as opposed to seeing it as the therapeutic landscape. When we think countertransference is bad, the relationship that we have with ourself as we hold space for our client is one of ignoring our inner experience because we think that it's ours, as opposed to seeing it as information about our client. So anything that we experience as we hold space for our clients that is different than how we felt before we held space for this particular client is information about the client. It's intuitive insight that is the therapeutic landscape itself. Where therapists often misunderstand countertransference is that when we attach to our experience from our personality and think that it's ours, that attachment to our experience actually inhibits the therapeutic process. This is more common when the experience that we have actually fits something that we have a reference point into our own personal lived experience. And having a reference point to something that we're experiencing as we sit with our client is just part of being a human. It's a human experience. However, if we honor what we're experiencing without attaching to it from our personality, we can bring more awareness and curiosity to this experience and actually make it explicit in the therapeutic relationship and discover what this information offers the therapeutic process. The most important thing in honoring countertransference as intuition is using language that doesn't attach to it as ours. So, for example, if we're sitting with a client and we notice a lot of resistance in our body, if we attach to that from our personality, we might think that we are resisting what our client is experiencing, or we don't like our client, or we think our client is bad in some way. If we bring awareness to the experience of resistance, we can just be curious about why this quality of resistance is here in the therapeutic container. And so instead of saying, "I feel resistant right now," we would say, for some reason, I'm noticing this quality of resistance. And I'm wondering, what do you notice when I say that? Oftentimes, what will happen, I'd say 9 out of 10 times, the client will say, I feel so much resistance. I don't want to be this way. And once we can bring that into the therapeutic container, the opening that happens is beyond anything that the mind could make happen. It's pretty magical, honoring countertransference in this way. The fifth mistake that therapists commonly make is that we engage with our client's personality and their patterns as if that is who they are, instead of helping them to reconnect with their essence. So, for example, if we're sitting with a client whose personality pattern holds a lot of self-loathing, if we engage with the client as if that self-loathing is who they are, then we're trying to change self-loathing into self-compassion, or we're trying to change self-loathing into acceptance. However, if we bring awareness to self-loathing and honor self-loathing as holding some important information about unfinished business from the past, we can invite our client to bring their awareness, their essential self, to the construct of self-loathing. So essentially, we're having them reconnect with who they really are in order to start to work with self-loathing. A client can't change self-loathing from the personality because essentially we're trying to say from your thought-based reality that holds self-loathing, change self-loathing. And this is where clients will feel very stuck and where therapists will often feel fairly incompetent or ineffective. We can't change some aspect of ourselves from the same level of consciousness that that aspect is holding. And so, by bringing awareness to self-loathing and honoring it and wrapping it with awareness and love and welcoming it from essence, a client will be able to start to work with themselves from their more liberated, awake self. And this is where they will rediscover their essence in a very natural and organic way. Because the mind generates ideas and stories and meaning-making, from their mind, they'll just try to generate a new meaning making. But from higher consciousness, there's a receptivity and openness, and this is where clients will have epiphanies and they're waking up to themselves. They're not trying to change themselves. We're trying to support clients in waking up to who they really are so that they can rediscover how to live from their true essence. So I really hope that you'll join us over on Patreon, where I'm going to offer a teaching piece on how to hold and maintain energetic boundaries with our clients. Join us in the Awakened Therapist online classroom, where my guest offers a masterclass in their area of expertise. This is intended for educational purposes only, and the content here should not be taken as advice or clinical supervision. Find out more at awakenedtherapist.com. The Awakened Therapist Level 1 certification is starting September 2025. In the 6-month training, you'll learn how to unlock the magic of psychotherapy. Join us in exploring deeper dimensions in your work with clients with less burnout. To learn more, check out our trainings at awakenedtherapist.com.